Welcome back to Eco Talk. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. And last week we chatted briefly, too briefly, with the author of a new book that is oh so timely. It's called 1,000 Barrels a Second by Peter Tsartsakian. We had to bring him back and do part two because we just didn't get to half of our questions. And boy, they're burning questions. And this is very topical with the State of the Union address a week and a half ago from President Bush admitting that we are addicted to oil. And I do think that's significant. Now you have to come up with what do we do about it. But if acknowledgement is half the battle, then, you know, it's a start.
Well, exactly, Betsy. It certainly is. It's part of the start of what I call in the book a rally cry. And you really need a rally cry to shake people up and get them motivated to do something.
You think war in Iraq, continuing threat of terrorism, asthma, you know, all the problems, health problems that come from pollution, from just burning fossil fuels in our car. That's of course one use of oil, but certainly a big one. And just the geopolitical implications of our addiction to oil. What more factors do we need adding to the mix to shake people up and bring this issue to a boil, really?
Well, the boil is a key term there, and there's no doubt all those things contribute to it. In the book, I talk about building pressure, which is very metaphorical to bringing things to a boil. And what it's going to take, regrettably, is probably a spiking price of oil. Now, we've seen $70 coming up all the way from $20 a few years ago, but it's probably going to take a little bit more than that to get what I would call a rally cry that really has teeth in it.
But don't we do much better if we start planning for what is now an inevitable future now and really start investing in renewable energy and really let people know that there's no quick fixes, that hydrogen is part hype in terms of it being here in the near term, and that when our backs are up against the wall and we, I mean, things are happening so rapidly already.
Right.
Just in the 2 years I've been doing this show in terms of a sense of, you know, limited supply, peak oil, and then just the, you know, aftermath of all the oil we're burning.
Well, you're right. We have to start somewhere, and the signs are encouraging, and I call that in my book, I call that the rebalancing phase of the problem. And so it will come. One of the things you said is really critically important, that is the time that it takes. I still think, though the addiction has been acknowledged, what is not being conveyed to the people is the scope and the magnitude of the addiction. And number two, how long it takes to go into, if you will, detox to rebalance the fuel mix.
And another important point among many that your book makes is that we may have 10, 20 years of oil left, but we've gotten the low-hanging fruit and that it's going to be more costly, maybe not the same quality. If we have to start drilling in, you know, the sands in Canada, there's incredible environmental impact of that.
Right.
So really the time to act is now.
Yeah. I think the only thing I would take exception to is that we are running out of oil. Like, we are not running out of oil, but there's no question our ability to grow the production of what's called the, you know, the cheap oil, the light, sweet crude, which is becoming much, much more costly and difficult. The fact that so much money is being spent in a place like the Canadian oil sands is a testament that light, sweet crude oil has really peaked in its production. The oil sands are just, you know, as you pointed out, tarry, bituminous oil that has to be refined. It's an environmentally unpalatable. The fact that we're there means that that the light sweet crude is running out.
We clearly need new policies and apparently a new president who's really going to tackle the other side of admitting addiction and really, I mean, CAFE standards, for instance, and improving fuel economy standards. If he had followed up that acknowledgement of our addiction with that, then it would have shown a true, you know, change, a real change in approach. But if it's just, you know, well, we're you know, putting a little into hydrogen research and solar and wind and nuclear and coal. And by the way, is there such a thing as clean coal?
I believe there is, yes. Yeah, you can do it. And you know, all these things, you can do anything you want. The issue is one of cost, okay? And people have to get accustomed to the fact that the era of cheap energy that has served as an entitlement to people has come to a close. And that recognition is also part of the rally cry that's required.
The party is over, to quote the title of one book on this very same topic. And and it's interesting, you know, people say, well, Bush doesn't want to call for sacrifice. No, he doesn't want to make anyone feel like, you know, we're in tough times, which is kind of strange. You know, I drive a hybrid car, have solar panels, do all those eco-friendly things. I don't feel like I'm sacrificing. I feel smarter. I feel like I'm part of the solution and not just the problem. We all do have an impact, of course, in our daily lives. But how important is lifestyle, especially in the absence of national policy leadership?
It's huge. I mean, it's absolute. The lifestyle issue is the one that has to be dealt with. And of course, it's very politically unpalatable to be talking about meddling with people's lifestyles.
When I hear that, I think, has anyone looked at the pictures of New Orleans? If this incredibly destructive hurricane season had anything to do with global warming, and let's just assume maybe it did, that's ugly. That's sacrifice. People lost their lives, their jobs. A whole city was drowned.
Right.
You know, driving a more fuel-efficient car in comparison?
Sure. I mean,
and I realize everybody can't go out and buy a new Prius, but
well, that's the key. But you know, they don't have to buy a Prius, and I think that's a really important consideration here. There's just too much emphasis on technology here. Technology saving the day when the low-hanging fruit is really staring at us. Okay, the low-hanging fruit is just buy a smaller vehicle. Okay, instead of a big SUV, if you just bought a smaller car, even a conventional gasoline-powered car, you would save 20 to 30% on your fuel economy, the same amount as if you just bought a Prius. So, as I said, it's somewhat odd that I think as a society we're very accustomed to technology, and indeed, in the long term, technology will help rebalance, as I call it, the problem. But in the near term, there are some very easy solutions.
And to find out more about them, you can go buy the book. I highly recommend it, 1,000 Barrels a Second, The Coming Oil Breakpoint and the Challenges Facing an Energy-Dependent World. Peter Tzadkian is the author, and I should mention, in addition to writing this very important piece of work, he's a former scientist with the Chevron Corporation, currently also a chief energy economist at ARC Financial Corporation. So he's very knowledgeable about this topic. I wish we had more time. Go to our website if you'd like links and more information about what we're discussing and also our guest today. You're listening to EcoTalk. Stay with us after the news break. We'll be back with more green news for you.
Thank you, Betsy.